Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey guys, it's Ben here. Just a quick note before we start this week's episode. We've got the amazing Georgia Challoner on the show. During the interview, we did chat about Hit Like a Girl. As soon as we finished our interview, some allegations were made online regarding Hit Like a Girl. Maybe you've seen these. So at Georgia's request, we have just cut that bit out of the episode. We just wanted to let you know. But we've got a great episode up ahead. Some really interesting stuff from Georgia. So enjoy.
Welcome to Drum and Drummer, a podcast focused on drums, drumming and drummers. I'm George Pickering, and that's Ben Winty, and we are both professional drummers in this business we call music. So stick around and join us as we pass the time whilst trying to stay in time.
Kind of pretended I knew more than I did, and I just changed some settings on the Mac, and everyone's like, wow!
Of course, it's me, Ben Winty, and George Pickering, back for another week of Drum and Drummer.
Let's count down. 3, 2, 1. Or should I say, 1, 2, 3?
Yes. If our scheduling has worked out.
Yeah.
This is episode number 1, 2, 3.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're out of the dirge now of like, oh, let's try and get to 10. Now it's just ridiculous. It's too many. Yeah. We're now at a point where if you go on Spotify and look it up, you're like, oh, I want to see that interview with that person. You got to really scroll. You got to scroll, boy. You know, if you want to listen to it.
When you want to watch a new TV series.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this has got 4 series. That's manageable. This is like Grey's Anatomy. But you go on. Yeah. Like, it's got 23 seasons.
Yeah. And each season has 22 episodes.
Yeah.
This is now my life.
It's not bad. Anyway, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah. I want to talk to you about my ear.
Okay.
So last week I mentioned...
We do have a guest today. We'll get to that. Yeah, go on. Your ear.
Yes, last week I mentioned I had a hearing test, which revealed I had minor damage around the 2 to 4 kilohertz range. But what I forgot to mention is I'm still yet to have my molds taken for my ACS in ears because the audiologist noticed that there was some minor swelling in my left ear canal, and she didn't want to take the molds with that swelling there, which makes sense, obviously, because it would be too small. So she then wrote a referral letter to refer me to my GP to have that checked out. Mm-hmm. Now, I love the NHS. You know that. Everyone knows that.
You'd never shut up about it, yeah.
No, constantly. But not to say it's been a little bit of a hassle, but obviously it's not an emergency.
No.
At all. The only emergency is I want my fucking in ears.
Yeah.
So I went on, I called up the doctor, my doctor's surgery, and I explained the situation. And then she said, you need to do an e-consult online. Mm-hmm. So I went on the practice's website, filled in this e-consult, this questionnaire, all these questions. And then they're like, someone will call you back by the end of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Then the next day they phoned back and said, oh, we've looked through your e-consult. Someone will be in touch to book you an appointment.
Yep.
And It's all fine because I'm not in any pain and it's not an emergency, but it is taking a while.
Yeah.
It is taking a while. Do you know what I mean? So that's where I'm at.
Maybe by the time this has come out, the things have progressed. But kind of like, I just want it taken a look at, really.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, I'd do it.
Yeah, I mean, if I could.
If I knew what I was looking for. I mean, yeah. Let me have a look. Yeah. I can't. I even squinted then, just to actually. Yeah. Yeah, that looks swollen. Yeah.
But so that's where I'm at. But I just thought that was an interesting thing that actually, as a result of having the hearing test, something that needs checking out.
Yeah.
You know, so go and get your hearing tested anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got a guest.
If you're scared, we've said it before, if you're scared, just go and do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it might not be that bad. And if it is bad, then
you know.
Yes, we have a guest today.
Yeah.
The fabulous Georgia. Yeah, it was nice to hear that she has listened to the show. That's always nice, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Kind of relieves any pressure. Sometimes you get someone on and they don't even know who's who out of me and you, you know. But
yeah,
she's listened. So I'll she understands. Say,
super fan. And those are my words, not hers.
Well, we can't actually say that, but you know, it was implied.
But wasn't I say? So she's drum tech, playback tech, and a drummer.
Yep.
And what's nice to know, she's just recently teched for Enter Shikari and was listening to the podcast while on the tour.
Yeah, which is lovely.
That's nice. And so we had to wait for her to get back before we could do. We messaged her about chatting to her because she's also teched for Johnny Brister, who we've had on the show.
Yes.
She was like, can't, going on tour. Cool, we'll wait till you get back. And yeah, so she was teching for Enter Shikari. I'm a big fan of that band. So that's great to hear all about the life of a tech and a playback tech and what she's been up to and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was fantastic. Should we just go on in?
Let's dive on in. Yeah. Here's our chat with Georgia Jalinar. Enjoy.
Thank you so much for having me. Honestly, I've been listening a lot and I don't really listen to music anymore. I just listen to podcasts. So when I was on tour, I just listened to basically every single episode. So I'm super excited.
Oh, shit. Ben, we got to live up to the hype. Ben's already got distracted. Where are you going?
I mean, I was listening to your one today in the bath this morning.
The most recent one?
The hard case one.
Hard case, yeah.
Sick.
There's the famous.
Oh, hello.
Sorry, he just got really annoyed and started bashing into my foot. And then
so
he's making
cute.
Noises. He's going, sorry, Hercules.
I was hoping that we'd get an appearance.
Yeah.
Well, so, I was a bit late joining George on the Zoom because he did a poo in the hall and dragged it around everywhere. So
amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to pop you down now, Hercules.
I'm really scared I'm going to sneeze because I have like post-tour flu. So I'm really worried I'm going to sneeze and snot's going to go everywhere. So if that happens, we'll edit that out.
No, we'll keep that in. That's
okay, keep it in, fine.
Yeah,
you can keep it
on
fine.
The video bit. Well, let's talk about that then, the tour you've just done with Enter Shikari, I believe.
Yeah, Enter Shikari, yeah.
How was that? I mean, what were you doing, teching?
Yeah, drum teching. So, yeah, it was amazing. It was my first time working with them and I'd listened to them since I was a teenager. So it was a pretty cool experience for me. And they were doing like an arena tour in the UK and Europe. So it was super exciting to do places like Wembley Arena.
Yeah.
Which like, I went to my first ever gig at. I saw S Club 7 and it was the exact same date Enter Shikari played was the same date, like however many years ago that I saw S Club. Wow. So I thought that was cool. But yeah, it was awesome. I was working for their drummer, Rob, and he was super lovely, like amazing to work for. He has like a hybrid setup. So he has an SPD, like another little Roland pad, and he has lots of triggers in. All of his drums have triggers in as well. So for like gates or like different sounds, that was super exciting for me. But it was definitely like cables, everything plugged into each other. And when we'd finish the show and local hands would come and help me move the drums off the drum riser, I'd have to like, wait, I have to unplug everything. I felt a bit like a surgeon almost. But yeah, it was amazing. It was the best time. and I feel very lucky.
Nice. Well, let's talk through a day in the life of being a drum tech for French Shikari, because I find all that interesting. How does it start? What's the first thing you're doing?
So because this was a big arena, there's a very big production. The band are like known for putting on an amazing show with lights and video. So I feel very lucky that I would go in slightly later than some of the other people. So like the riggers would start work at 7 a.m. every day and they would finish super late. But I would probably go in about 9, go into the venue, see what's going on, see how far they've got. I essentially, as a drum tech, have to wait for the drum riser to be built. It's made all out of LED screens and LED ramp. So I can't put anything on there until that's built and safe. So again, about 9, try and find a toilet because tour bus. You can't really use the toilet much on a tour bus. Have breakfast. And then, I'm really keen to get started, basically. Find all my stuff, make sure that everything's been unloaded, help unload if it hasn't, get my stuff in a place. And then I would always start with stands, set up all the stands, then check the drums, see if they need the heads changing, tune them, then put all the cymbals up. On the UK leg of the tour, we were doing 2 stages. So I'd set up the main drum kit, then set up the B stage drum kit, which is next to the front of house desk. And halfway through the set, they'd run and do a song there or two. So 2 of them. Say after I'd done them, I'd go and take all the stuff to he has a drum room. It's like a practice room. So another little mini drum kit in there. So he's endorsed by British Drum Co.
Oh, yeah.
And he has a really cute little drum kit that he practices on.
Keep holding it, Ben.
And then,
I'll keep holding it.
Oh, yeah. I'm so oblivious. I'm so sorry. Love that. Sorry, I was oblivious to that. Sick shirt. And then, from there, I guess, make sure everything's nice. So if I have a bit of time, which I don't always, do maintenance on the drums. And then wait for the riser to be built. Then we line check. Then they sound check. Then I would cover the drums in a sheet. And then, wait until the show. Then in the show, they had massive towers that basically are big video screens. I would stand behind one of the towers and I always try and stand hi-hat side. Because when the drummer's playing, if they're trying to communicate, they have a talk back, but the drummers are using both their hands, right? So it's kind of hard for them to do that. So it's probably easier for them to see when they're for the hi-hat. Stand there. Sometimes things go wrong and I have to run up. Because it was LED screen, it wasn't like on a drum mat or marked out on a drum mat. So we used some hooves. Sometimes they would slide. So sometimes run up and do that or whatever else you needed to do. And then after the show, like I said, quickly get the drums off as quick as possible. So do that. Sometimes get some stage crew to help me and then pack down and then make sure everything's in the right place and then wait until the truck's there to load.
Nice. Were you surprised?
Then sleep, and then again.
Yeah, it's there. And it rolls up. I did look at that tour. It looked like there wasn't really a gap. It looked like every day pretty much.
The only days off we really had were travel days. I think we had one day off in Manchester where I properly had a day off. But it was good.
Yeah, were you surprised? Because I've been one of those local hands before, helping the drum tech or whoever. Were you surprised by how long a day is for a show? Because you say you start at 9 a.m. for a show that might be at 9 p.m.,
I think when I first started teching it, I was really shocked by it. For this tour, I knew it would be a lot because of the production and they're a headline band. But there was one day, I think it was the second show, but we'd obviously been working at pre-production and everything before. The second show, I was like, oh my God, how am I going to do this for the rest of the month? I can't even walk. My body's not designed for drums. And in the show, I ran to get something and I fell over and all my knees were bruised. So I had to get knee pads and I was like, this is the longest day. But they are really long. And I think it's really hard if you've got friends or family or a partner who doesn't work in this industry, because they don't realize that you're busy the entire day and you're on a different, a completely different time zone. So if my friends were sending me voice notes, I wouldn't hear it until 3 a.m. or even later sometimes. And then I'm in my bunk and I'm oh, my AirPods have died. I can't listen to this. But it's part of the job. And you do get a little bit of downtime. But they're very long days.
Well, they are. And I think it's just, even if you have a break, I guess, you know, we've talked to other people who are drum techs and it's like you might have a gap, but it's, you still got to do the show later. You know, you might have a few hours to go off, but you might not want to go off. You might want to, right, okay, let's make sure this is set up correctly, you know, or anything.
Yeah. I'm definitely not one of the people who goes off unless we're like in somewhere that's very exciting. But yeah, I'm definitely like, I need to stay around because Rob in this tour, because Rob had the practice room as well. I'd be making sure that everything was right in there. And also I'm tired and like I get sick so much, hence me sounding like this. So I just needed to preserve my energy because I wanted to do the best that I could. But yeah, it's definitely a long day and I admire anyone who can go here, there and everywhere in the gaps, but I can't do that.
No, it's fair.
What's the practice kit set up like?
So he has, I don't know the sizes off the top of my head, but like tiny. I want to say like almost maybe like a 16-inch bass drum. I might be completely wrong. It might be 18, but it's tiny. And then a rack and a floor. And they're basically completely filled with stuffing. So you can't really hear them. And then he has a few snares he switches between. So he has like a similar snare to the kit. And then he has like a steel one. And he has the Evans practice cymbals. So he has just a ride, crash, and then some hi-hats. And he has a like a wooden jam block, like cowbell thing. And when I tell you he drums the entire day, I'm not over-exaggerating. Like he will be practicing all day. And that's something that I really learned on this tour, that I really looked up to him and he really inspired me because he would be constantly wanting to improve himself. And at first I was like, you're going to knacker yourself out. You're going to get tired, but he didn't. And there was a day where the first song they start with is System Meltdown and it's like double pedal. And he told me one day that he like wanted to get better at it. And he spent every day that week working on it and it sounded amazing. So fair play to him. Like he's a very good drummer and he puts in the work. So
I love the idea of you going, maybe I don't play so much.
I was like, oh, I know what he's going to do. He's going to tie himself out and he's going to play badly because you're drumming the entire day. But no, he smashed it. Fair play to him. He's a machine.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't drumming, he was going on a run or working out.
Yeah.
I could not be him. Fair play to him.
It's interesting. I'll just say, I remember hearing about Foo Fighters. Apparently they practice for about 8 hours before they do a show or something like that. Something great. It's a whole stint and then they'll do 3 hours. And it's just so then they feel warmed up. You're like, that is a whole day. You know, it's not just.
Yeah, definitely. I think being crew as well, sometimes like if you have an artist who not everyone needs to do that, wants to do that. But if you have an artist who's very chill, who gets to relax all day and do what you want, and then you're just grinding, you're like, huh, cool. Obviously, it's your job. So you're respectful. When you see or work with people who are like really putting in their effort every day to improve their show, it's like, oh, yeah, we're all grinding. And it's super nice.
What's your sort of interaction time with Rob on this sort of tour? Is it do you spend a lot of time with him, or is it kind of you do your thing and he does his thing, or what how does that kind of work?
I think, to be honest, because of how the days are set out, he doesn't need to come in early, but he does. I think he's like an early riser, so I normally see him in the morning, and he often would come and check in, make sure that everything was there, and if I needed anything. And that's like a credit to him being super welcoming and lovely. And then I would probably see him if I took all the stuff, the practice kit in, and I check in with him. And then sound check, I would see him. And then before the show, I'd always go and get his water bottle. So yeah, make sure he's had enough and then fill it up. But I do see him throughout the day, but I don't think you're there to be their best friend. I think you're there to work for them. And I think sometimes it's bad etiquette if you were like to sit in the band dressing room all day and like try and hang out because you're there for work, you know? Some people are probably best friends with their the drummer they're working for. But I didn't know him before this, so I didn't want to step on any boundaries, but he was super lovely. And I did get to spend a lot of time with him and it was super cute. Like when we did Wembley, he asked me if I wanted to go to the drum shop in Wembley with him as well. So we went out. And it was really nice. It was nice to like nerd out. So yeah, I did get to spend time with him, but I wasn't like in his pocket the entire time.
What's the sort of prep for, because you say you hadn't met him before the tour. When are you brought on board to start that process?
It's different for everyone. Like I've done it before where I've literally just showed up to a festival and worked for them. Like you had Johnny on here, right? When I checked for him, for Jake Shears, I met him on the day. But he's amazing, so it's fine. But for Enter Shikari, I basically went up to where they practice and met up with him and the band to make sure we all got along. And we did, so that was good. And I think I had a Zoom call with him initially. And then, yeah, then it's pre-production. And then, yeah, I guess it's different for everyone. But for this one, it was a Zoom call just to make sure that I guess I was real. And then meet up with them, make sure that it's all good vibes. And then go to their pre-production and see how I work, I guess.
Does it feel like a job interview when you meet them? How do you feel when you're, especially a band that, you know, you said you were listening to Enter Shikari for years, like, how are you feeling about that opportunity? And how did you deal with those first interactions with them?
Yeah, I think the first, the thing that was weird was, if, I don't know if he will hear this, but if Rob hears this, he'll probably laugh at this. I was at flat viewing. And I got like, my phone just started going off and I was like, I shouldn't look at it. Like, and then I looked and it was like, Rob started following you. And I was like, oh, that's weird. Drummer from Enter Shikari. And then like literally the next day I was like on a phone call with him. I think maybe we had some mutual friends or something. So we knew of each other. So it was kind of chill. But yeah, I just try and focus on what they need and what the job is and I guess be nice. But yeah. For other things, I've just been like super nervous, and in music, it's so different to any other job interview. I had this conversation this morning with, I'm a twin, and she has nothing to do with music, but she was talking about interviews and how she preps. And I was like, yeah, music, you just kind of have a nice, friendly conversation. And like, sometimes they don't even need a CV, which is scary.
But, just yeah, to check you're
it's
not
way
a dick,
more chill. Yeah, basically, all they ever do is check you're not a dick. Which hopefully I'm not.
Did he have any, when you had those first chats with Rob, did he have any, like, list any kind of, like, expectations or requirements or this is what I kind of want you to do? Anything like that from his perspective that he was like, this is how, was there anything
not really
that surprised you with what you had to do?
Let me think if there's anything that surprised me. I know they really wanted, like, a one-team approach and that everyone gets their hand stuck in on everything. Which, to be fair, I was really glad to hear that, because I've definitely done things before where it's not like that and everyone fends for themselves and it makes it really difficult to complete a job, I guess. And I wanted to learn more about other departments as well, so that's super helpful. And I think he was just like, that team is really a family, and when you go and work with people, they're like, our team is a family, our crew is a family, and it's not, but there's genuinely, everyone is so nice. Everyone works together and cares. So I think that was just really emphasized to me. And when I got there, I could see why. And everyone helps each other out. But nothing that really surprised me. I'm trying to think if there is anything. No, not really.
I want to ask about our friend Johnny Brister and the Jake Shears gig. Because to segue from teching into playback work, am I right in saying you did both on the show with Jake Shears? Is that right?
So I did one show, Techie and Playback, but did most of it. So at the time, I was doing quite a lot of playback work, which we can speak about in a bit.
Yeah.
And I was at some production rehearsals for an artist called Becky Hill doing playback. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy there called Steve, and he was like, I know you. And I was like, really? He's like, you're a drum tech. And I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure we've never met ever. I'm pretty sure we don't know who each other was, because he was listing these artists and he was like, you've worked for them. And I was like, I haven't, but sure. And he was like, you have. And I was like, I haven't, but fair enough. And then I just got a call one day being like, can you come to Italy to work for Jake Shears? Like, I think you'll really get along with Johnny. And I was like, yeah. So I did. Yeah. And then met Johnny and, like, you know, the nicest person in music. Mm. And something that was really nice about when I met him as well was he was so interested in me as a drummer, and we sat outside somewhere in Italy and really spoke to me about like my drumming journey and really cared, which was really nice from the get-go. What was the question you asked me about playback?
Well, there was something I wanted to lead on to because I was aware that that gig you did both. Yeah, playback. We haven't had anyone on this podcast yet that does this. And I just find it fascinating because it's sort of, I run playback for the gigs I do, but it's just me doing it on Ableton or, you know, whatever. But with, you know, Becky Hill or Jake Shears, it's obviously a big production. What is it like being a playback tech?
It's very different depending on the group or the artist you're working for. With the Jake Shears one that I did, that was just, they didn't have a playback tech that day and they knew that I could do it. So I just operated it. So like set up the actual rig, ran the show, and they knew that I'd seen the show a few times because I was drum teching. So that is quite common. You just basically have to know Ableton and kind of know the set or vaguely know the songs to know the flow and then do that, which is basically just like operating. But quite a lot of the time it involved the programming, which I presume you're asking about. So yeah, I've done that before. That's what I did at that other gig I was saying about, and that's also kind of what I do now. So I work for a guy called Tom Kane, who's like a musical director, and he has a company called A Work in Progress where he's basically, we're all programming together and he's helping me get better at it essentially. But I was the same as you. I was running it while drumming.
Yeah.
And I think over the last, like, I don't know, 10, maybe 5 years, that's become so important and the drummer has to really like own that. And if you want to get hired as a session drummer, you have to be quite savvy with that kind of stuff. And I noticed lots of session people I looked up to were doing that. So, when I was teching one day for my first big tech gig, we were on tour and they were like, can you just run the playback? So like I said, literally just like start, stop, making sure it's set up. And I was like, I'm really scared of this. Like I've only ever done it when it's something I've programmed or like while I'm playing. And they're like, you'll be fine. And like, I used to have another job as well as working and I worked at Apple. So they were like, you'll be fine. You know, technology.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I accidentally got into it really. But I think if you want to be a drummer in the industry nowadays, I think you need to be doing so many different things. So you need to be like, you need to know playback because everyone who I know who is a session drummer is doing that as well. Or you have to be like an MD or be like a backline tech or do something else. Because I feel like if you're a guitarist, you could be setting up guitars on the side to make money. It's kind of hard to do that in the drum world. I feel like occasionally people will ask me to like fix something, but it's not really the same. It's not like a regular income. And it depends on what you do, but drummers don't really tend to get like song writing royalties. So I think it's very hard as a drummer to get money from that, so you have to have lots going on essentially.
Yeah. So with a playback gig, say if you're doing purely a playback gig, how much of it is down to you in setting up the programming? Is everything down to you, or is it ever a case of, hey, we've made the set, we just need you to press play? Or where do you lie in that? That makes sense.
So one of the artists I work for doing just playback is a singer called Piri, and she's like in a band called Piri and Tommy. And it's like UK garage / drum bass / pop. And before I was always just running it. So like setting it up, pressing start and stop, because I like replaced that old playback tech. But last year it started to get to the point where I was taking over. So she wanted her set to change. So I programmed that. And then now looking at hopefully starting programming for this year as well. So I think if you've been working with an artist a little bit of time, they would expect you to do it.
Yeah.
But I guess it depends on the dynamic. Sometimes like the musical director might want to do it and provide you with it. Sometimes people just really want to playback tech there just in case something goes wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, it depends on the artist. But
has there been anything that's gone wrong whilst doing it?
Yeah, I've definitely triggered the wrong song a few times, but that's normal. That's only happened like twice maybe, and that was very early on. I'm trying to think if anything else has gone wrong. Not really. I feel very lucky, but I think if you speak to anyone who does playback, there'll always be some horror stories. I think we had it once where there was like my first show with Piri, there was like buzzing coming through. We couldn't figure out what it was. And I like kind of pretended I knew more than I did. And I just changed some settings on the Mac and everyone was like, wow. And it just happened to stop. So
I love it.
But
everyone's
winging
it.
Stuff like that. Yeah. I think, everyone is winging it in the music industry.
Yeah. I think so. Go on, Ben.
Did you see yourself ever going into these avenues? Like a few, you know, when you were younger, did you ever think these were possible or things you wanted to do?
No.
Do you like doing them?
I never knew about playback, really. I thought the drummer just always did it. And I think that was incredibly naive of me. Like I knew that I was doing it when I was playing, but I never thought that like there was a whole gig for that. And it wasn't until I was asked to do it. And I went to BIM and I knew about playing to track and I knew that it was a really important thing, but I never knew that you could have a whole job as it. And I wish I had more time to spend on that and get ready. But yeah, I think I always thought I was just going to be a player. And I was like, yeah, that's going to happen. And then last year, I like took a little bit of a step back from playing because I was like having some tests done on my heart and they told me not to play drums. And I was like, oh, I'm 27. I don't have that much longer, you know? Because one thing that's really important to me is I really want to have kids. And I know you can have kids and still do your career. Like I've listened to your podcast and heard other people talk about it, but I was like starting to panic. And then I just basically said yes to everything. And then I found that you can do things down another route. And I really enjoy drum teching. I still get the feeling that I get from playing drums, my drum teching. And I like playback as well. It can be very stressful doing playback, but I really like it. And it's nice sometimes to like do a tour or a gig where you're like, oh, I don't have to set up loads of drums or carry loads of drums. I just carry a rig. That's so nice.
Well, let's talk about you as a drummer then. It's such a tricky question.
Feel free if you don't want to talk about it, but you mentioned a heart issue. And that meant you had to stop playing. Do you mind talking a little bit more about that?
Basically, when I was drumming, I was like sessioning maybe 2 years ago. And I kept feeling like I was passing out. And I remember there was a show I was doing in Manchester. I was like, I can't do this. Like, I feel like I'm just like, I feel like I could completely black out. And I wasn't sure what it was and I wasn't ill or anything. And basically, the reason I started to get my heart tested is because I put on my friend's Apple Watch and it said I had something called atrial fibrillation. I think I pronounced that right. And I was like, oh, that's weird. I'm just standing up.
My mum has that.
Yeah, so now I've learned about it and I found out it's quite common. Basically, I was being tested for that and I was wearing an ECG monitor and I had just come back from a tour where I was sessioning. And it was so sad because I got offered like another tour straight away and I had to say no to it. And I was just like so upset. And I was like, this is the end for me. I can't play drums. I can't exercise. And they basically said that there's some weird stuff there, but I should be okay. That's what I've been left with. Mm. And they said, you're young. So I just started drumming again. But I need to go back and get it checked, really. But I think something like that really put things into perspective for me being like, and especially on the road as well. Sometimes I remind myself being like, you need to look after your body because could give up on you. And we hear so many stories of like people in this industry who suffer with things and the horror stories, you know. But yeah, I don't really know how bad my heart is, if I'm super honest. I'm sure it's fine. But yeah, I had to stop. And one thing that is funny is when I was wearing the ECG monitor, I like couldn't play, but I like, it was my birthday and I went to see Limp Bizkit at Wembley and I went to see Paramore at the O2. And you have to go through like security machines. And both times they were like buzzing and freaking out because I was wearing the ECG monitor. They thought I was trying to smuggle something in. But no, yeah.
By this point, had you already started teching or did teching come as like, oh, I might need to change up and do something else if I can't continue actually playing?
So I was doing teching like on the side and the goal was always be a session drummer, play drums. And I think I'd done like two tours, maybe like teching. So I was kind of lucky that people already knew that I was a drum tech or did drum teching. And then when I stopped drumming for a little bit, I was like, okay, I could probably focus on this. which, to be fair, you're doing lifting and you're still working hard, but I guess it wasn't to the point where I was feeling like I was blacking out or fainting or not being able to breathe. So yeah, I focused on that, and I got lucky that I kept getting offered opportunities for that. But I never saw myself being a drum tech or playback. But I guess it all worked out all right.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Well, I saw that red snare that you've got from, is it Zach from Paramore?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Everyone asks me about this the time.
The way I research for these interviews is I just scroll someone's Instagram. And
Instagram,
I saw that,
yeah.
And I was like, what? How did you get a Paramore snare drum?
Yeah. It's funny because when I was playing drums for someone, they did a TikTok about the snare and loads of people saw it and everyone's like, oh, you're the girl with the Paramore snare. Basically, I love Paramore, and when I like found my feet in drumming, so like when I wasn't just playing like a basic beat and I'd been playing drums for a little while, I discovered Paramore and that changed everything for me. I look like a basic Paramore fan, but like the reason I love them is because of how good Zach is, and I think he's such an underrated drummer, like even now with the parts he writes. Basically, genuinely, it's just like Facebook. And like one of the drum pages, there was a guy selling a bunch of old Truth drums. And I think he used to work for Truth. And he teched for Paramore. And he was like, I have his snare. Does anyone want it? And I was like, right. No one else can have this. How do I get this? And I was basically messaging him, being like, please, please. Like, you're my favorite drummer. And he was like, no, I've seen your drum videos. You're really cool. I think you should have it. But I hope it's actually his. Because imagine if it wasn't. And I've just been.
Yeah. He's just
to be fair,
out.
I have. Yeah, I've that much of a, you know, fan that I went and researched it, and I've got loads of videos of him playing this drum. So yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. How much was it? We talking about?
I can't even remember, but ridiculously cheap.
Oh,
like,
really?
It shouldn't have. Yeah, like he was just selling it off. Like I remember being like, really? Yeah, I just got really lucky, I guess. But amazing. I'm too scared to play it. Also because it's 14x8, like that's like my dream sound, but I'm shorter and I am playing a little bit like T-Rex arms if I do that. So yeah.
Fair. I want to talk about your, you know, your introduction into drumming, how you got into it, and almost the lead up to BIM.
I think I started playing drums when I was like 8 or 9. And I couldn't tell you how I got into drums. I know I really wanted to play a musical instrument, and I was just like obsessed with it. And I just wanted to play a musical instrument. And I think I asked to play a guitar because I saw Avril Lavigne on TV, and I was like, I want to do that. And I can't remember why I didn't play guitar, but yeah, I remember just eventually coming to the conclusion I wanted to play drums. I really wanted to play trumpet, but I wasn't old enough at school to do that yet. So I think I asked for a drum kit for Christmas, like on a whim. And my mum was like, I can get you drum lessons. So I started with Dill Davies, who makes Porter and Davies.
Oh, okay.
You know, the seat.
Yeah.
And he's based in Brighton as well. And yeah, I'm so lucky that I had him as my teacher, because he really just made it fun and about playing for a song, all about groove and not like just reading a book or like doing greats. He gave me like the love for it, and he'd be like, what song do you want to learn? I would take a song and we'd learn it. Obviously he taught me to read and everything as well, but yeah, no one in my family plays a musical instrument. No one in my family is musical. I have a bit of envy sometimes when like I speak to other musicians, like my housemate's a guitarist and he was like brought up on Queen, and like you hear people who are like their parents listen to Rush and stuff, but like my mum was like in the kitchen listening to like drum and bass and garage, and my parents like almost just listen to rave music. So I was like the odd one out. But the more I think about it, I'm like, if you listen to like early noughties and 90s UK garage, it really like when it kicks in, the thing that makes it impactful is the drums. So maybe subconsciously that's where I wanted to play drums, maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
And then yeah, I took lessons for years, and then I think when I was 12 I like joined a band. And my sister played guitar, my twin sister played guitar, and their drummer like didn't show up, and she was like, all right, my sister would do it. And then everyone was like, okay, you're quite good, do you want to like actually carry on? So I did.
Any
that
shocking then, shocking band names from school?
I'm trying to think. Not shocking band names. I know that I like don't want to say the names of any of the bands I've been in, because I don't want anyone to listen to it. But I know I was like definitely the kid in school who played drums for everyone. Man, I was so busy.
How did you find that? I was chatting to someone recently, and I described how music affected my school life in quite an extreme way, and they were quite surprised by that. Did you find drumming changed school for you?
When you say it affected you, do you mean like your schoolwork, or do you mean social?
I think both. So I think it gave me a perspective of like, oh, this is what I want to do. I maybe need to not ease off the schoolwork, like I still did well, but it maybe aligned my priorities moving past school into music. But for me, mainly, it was gave me, I think, credibility or like notoriety.
Identity as well.
Identity.
I just chime in. That was how I felt, you know.
And bluntly, respect from the dickheads. Like, oh, he's the guy who plays, he can play Green Day. Like, he's cool. Does it, I don't know if that seems like a common thing. Did you have anything like that? Did it change?
100%. Yeah. I think in terms of like schoolwork, I was all right at school. But yeah, the whole time I was like, I'm going to be a drummer. That's all I care about. All I care about is playing drums and being a musician. And that's all I could focus on. And I couldn't see myself doing anything else apart from that. Obviously, I still like tried at school, but I just knew that it would be music I wanted to do. And in terms of, you said something that was like really important there, like about identity and like respect. And for me, like, I think that's why I got so obsessed with drums. And I think it's because I had someone who was like a twin, exactly the same as me. And we're constantly being compared to each other. And then I finally had something that I could do that she couldn't do. And that was like my thing. And I think that's where I was like, oh my God, this is everything. And yeah, at school, it was kind of the same. I look back and I'm like, if I didn't play drums at school, like, would I have been social? Would I have had friends? I guess it's the same with like, if someone's like in the football team at school and is really good, like they get respect. I guess it's similar to that.
I think it is. Not to make it a pity party about me, but you know, I was a loner at school, and there was this really cool guy that played guitar. And as soon as I started playing drums with him, I was in his gang, and that was it, you know, to put it really bluntly. Yeah. It was sort of like, oh, yeah, that guy that we've never spoken to. It was exactly the same as Ben. It was, we played Green Day covers at break, and then I was at the cool table, you know, from being very much not at the cool table. But yeah,
it's weird how we all played Green Day.
It is weird. It is weird.
And the kids are playing it now. That's the weird thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what's funny.
It's great.
I used to keep playing Nirvana and Green Day.
I used to teach drums at school, and they'd be like, I'd be like, what kind of music do you like? And they're like, oh, I like old stuff like Green Day and Arctic Monkeys. And I was like, fuck, I'm getting old now. Yeah, I know. This is it. Yeah. It's weird. They sort of play the songs that I was learning when I was playing drums.
It's just 30-year cycles. 30-year cycles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beatles, Oasis. It just keeps, you know.
Keeps going.
As a managing your diary, as a drum tech, playback tech, drummer, how far are you like booked up in advance? And how do you negotiate, like, maybe this tour's great, but it clashes with something else? You know, does that happen a lot? And
Yes, I'm in that position right now. It's like you'll have dry months and then you're like, come on, man, I need some work. And then everything is coming all at once. And like this year, always the start of the year is quite slow. I guess it's the same because you both do session playing, don't you? Yeah, I don't know what it's like for you at the beginning of the year. It's quite slow for us as the crew. But yeah, I'm just getting so much through festival season, which I'm very thankful for, but I hate turning down opportunities. I always feel so much guilt, but yeah, it's just part of the job, isn't it? It's the same with playing. You have to prioritize things, and it, like, recently I've had to prioritize, like, figure out what my priorities are. Like, is it money? Is it like the crew you're working with? Is it the music that you want to prioritize? Like, do I prefer this music to that music? Is it like how the day is set out? Is it like you'd be doing less on this, or you'd be more involved on this? Or that's what you have to kind of weigh up. And it's definitely hard to balance it all. And I always feel the time at home I have, I'm like recovering. It's not like rest or time at home. It's me just like trying to get ready again to go back out, to be honest.
I was going to ask an honest, you don't have to give numbers. I'm quite interested to know how payment works for teching on a tour. Are you paid, let's say it's a 20-date tour, are you on a day rate? Are you on a set rate for the whole tour? Does that day rate change depending on where you are? You don't have to give numbers if you don't want, but I'm just interested to see how that is sort of structured, maybe.
Yeah, so in my experience, I've always been on day rates. I think most things are on day rates, and then you get paid that obviously per day. If you're lucky, you'll get paid that on a day off. Sometimes you won't. Sometimes you'll get paid half. It depends on the size of the tour, who you're working with, the budget, etc. But yeah, normally a day rate is what we go by. And it obviously that also depends on the artist and the size of the artist and what they're getting paid for. So that's another thing as well. And then there is another thing which I've never had, but you can get this, called a retainer, which means you're just paid every month, even if you're not working for them, because it's the same as if you were like a session drummer, you could get a retainer, but it's because they want to keep you. They pay you a salary, like a yearly salary, and they spread it out for the months. But you never had that yet. Maybe one day.
Yeah.
Those little nuggets. That's what I love. Those little nuggets of information.
Yeah.
From behind the scenes, like, oh, that exists. Okay. Just trying to understand how it works, you know.
I don't mind talking about like this kind of stuff and being honest, because like I said, when I listened to your episode with James, I found it really useful to hear about how you can make money from being a drummer, but not necessarily just playing all the time. And I didn't know about this stuff before, and I wish I did. So like, I don't mind talking and being super honest about everything, but yeah, like most of the time it's day rates, and it really does, like, there's no specific set number of what I would say. Like when I first started drum teching, I asked people, being like, what's like a drum tech wage? And it's literally different for everything you do. So there's not really a generic ballpark I could give you. But obviously if you're doing a pop tour, you'd get paid quite a bit more than if you're doing like rock, maybe, unless you're playing for like, unless you're teching for like Foo Fighters, I guess. I don't know.
It's interesting, isn't it? The travel day thing. That was something I learned. I actually spoke to Johnny Brister about it.
Yeah.
Because I said, you know, I tried not to be like, how much are you getting? But I was intrigued. I was like, what, you know, what is the Jake Shears payment? And he explained about the gig payment, but he also said the travel day. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course. You know, there's days where you're not playing a gig, but you're still, it's not like you can go home, you know, if you're on a tour, but it's not a show. That's something. So it's interesting you said it might be half or it might be, might not get it, you know.
Yeah, it's different for everyone. Like with Jake Shears, it's really nice because I felt like coming into that the crew were really well respected and like you've got time. So like we would travel up like a day before. So it's not like just rushing all the time and like you got really well looked after. And the team's really chill and lovely.
Yeah.
But yeah, then you also get things like a long tour, like where you might not get days off or you might not get paid for your travel days, which is absolutely fine. But if you're like traveling quite far, that's another day where you could have been doing something else. So that's what I mean about balancing things up to see what worked best. To be super transparent as well, you also get something called PDs. Do you know about these?
Is it per diems?
Which are like per diems, which is like just in this industry, even if you're like a lighting tech or something. And it's like, I'm probably not going to do the best at explaining this, but it's like spending money for the day. So if you need any essentials, like a toothbrush or for your food or something, you get given them per day. But sometimes you will get given them every day, or they send them to you in advance, or you'll get given the money, but sometimes you get them at the end of the tour as well. So if you're on a long tour and you don't get them every day and you get them at the end of the tour, you also could be quite broke by the end. So it's one of these things you have to balance to figure out. It's all crazy. There's no rule book, really.
No.
I've had
How long have you got?
Yeah. You had one?
Yeah, I was. It wasn't music related, but I used to work for PlayStation and I got sent to Spain for a couple of days to do a games expo. And
amazing.
We got given a €200 per diem. We were literally only there for 24 hours. But it was like, if you need to get anything, just, you know, they paid for flights and accommodation. Like, if you just need to
buy. That is incredible.
And
I don't normally get €200.
No.
Nowhere near that.
This was sweet, sweet PlayStation money.
Oh, yeah.
But when we flew out, flew out in the morning. And then we did the Games Expo the next day. And then we flew home. So it was a very whistle-stop trip. But they lost my suitcase on the flight out, and all I had was flying to Spain. I had jeans, black jeans, and I had a Spanish football top on. And so we got to landed in Spain, and they lost my suitcase, and they said, "Oh, it will be coming in tomorrow. Where are you staying?" And I said, "Well, I'm flying home tomorrow, so I might as well just pick it up on the way back." So then I had to use my per diem to go to a clothes shop, and because I was like, I can't stand on stage being filmed presenting about our new features of the game in Spain in a Spanish football top, and I'm going to get quite hot in jeans. So thankfully, I had this per diem, and I went to a surf shop and just bought myself. And also, as well, I wanted to go swimming. They had like this in the suitcase was my swim shorts, my flip flop, like even all my shower bag. So I didn't even have any hair gel, and then we had these two Spanish reps from the game looking after us, and they had to like go and help because I had hair at that time.
I was going to say, I did just pull a confused face, but I didn't want to say anything just in case.
I had luscious blonde hair and it was really thin, and so it needed gelling, and I was like, I can't go on stage with just floppy blonde hair. So they went out and got me some hair gel, but luckily I had a per diem, so I went and bought myself some swim shorts and went swimming.
Nice. Did you get it in advance?
Yeah, we got it. Yeah. Yeah.
Got it.
Oh, I'm in the wrong career. I need to go and work for PlayStation. I'll tell you that.
Well, actually, they've just announced they're closing the studio I used to work for.
I was going to say, I heard it on the radio the other day, Ben.
That's the one I worked for. Yeah. And they're just making all 900 people redundant. So,
Jesus. Glad you got out and started a podcast.
Well, yeah, it's interesting, actually, because
we make no money on.
Because I, at the time, it was like, you know, I wanted to leave and go back to being a musician and move back to Portsmouth. But I had a steady job and a stable sort of career. But I took the risk at 26 and I quit that job and I came back to Portsmouth and I started from scratch. And it's funny, I'm still doing this. And then, when was it? 13 years later, that studio I used to work for doesn't exist anymore. In what something you thought was so stable.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
So it kind of makes me think, well, if I'd have stayed there, I'd have been gone now. You know, that would have been the end. But I've actually built something, while risky, feels like it could be endless because it's up to me to make the work. You probably know where this is going, Georgia.
Yeah.
And maybe you're prepared, but who is your favourite delivery company?
Yeah. When I've heard you say this, everyone, I've been like, oh my God, I don't even pay attention to who's delivering anything. So Royal Mail, I do have stuff to say about that. It's so annoying when they leave the slip and then you have to go and get it. And it takes like a few days or something. But at least I know where it is so I can go and get it. So that's why I've chosen Royal Mail.
Quickly to interject about, are you Brighton based?
Yeah.
So Royal Mail, the place where you have to go, I swear it's only open like Monday and Tuesday now from like 10 a.m. till midday. And I didn't realize, I turned up at like 4 and they were like, no, we're shut. You have to come back literally next week. I'm like, what's going on? What's happened to the post office? So anyway, that's my beef with that. But yeah, carry on.
Yeah. I chose Royal Mail though, because I feel like they're not going to leave it somewhere weird.
Hmm.
And I've had it where I had a brick of drumsticks being delivered, and they delivered I live on a really long road, like a big main road, and it would take you like a long time to walk from the top to the bottom. And they like left it at a house at the bottom, which is not my address or the address that was on the thing.
Do you remember who they were?
Oh, this was years ago, probably like Every or something.
Yeah, it's cool.
We were all thinking it.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably Every. It must have been, because I could see what house it was at. So yeah, but I'm going to say Royal Mail, and the slips are red. And I know that's so stupid, but anything red wins.
You do like red, yeah. No, that's...
Dude, I really want to get that like looked into, why I'm obsessed with anything red.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Must be a thing. Yeah.
That's why I don't Sainsbury's, because I don't like the orange.
Yeah, but they wear like burgundy, don't they? Or brown, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it's because I used to work for them and it was rubbish.
Yeah, that might be it.
But I like
the maybe that's why you co-op.
Don't. Oh, did you?
Oh, co-op. Go, okay.
I worked there for a month and I was like, yeah, nah, I want to play drums, bye. But this was like in uni. So, yeah.
Co-ops are weird in between. It's not quite expensive, but it's not quite, I don't know. It's like, what are you trying to be? You know, Aldi, you know where you are with it. And Waitrose, you know where you are. But co-op.
Yeah, you don't know where you are.
Is it good or not? I don't know.
I'd say it is expensive. I'd say
it's expensive, but it's everywhere. So you just go anyway because it's there. But it's
what they've
expensive.
Nailed is the convenience of walkable, and it's got enough stuff in there to sort you out. But can't.
And the crisps. Are you a fan of salt and vinegar crisps, Georgia? Because
not really.
I wasn't, and then when I became into vinegar, which is a weird thing to say. Turns out salt and vinegar co-op crisps are the best, because if you know, you get this real, it numbs your mouth. It's almost,
you can have teeth out after eating them and feel a bit.
Anyway, so Royal Mail,
I'll give them a try just for you.
Well, you know, I don't want to force, if you're not even a fan of salt and vinegar, because they are well,
I'm not a vinegar girl, but I'll try it.
I never used to be. My partner is obsessed with vinegar. And now I'm into pickled things and, you know, all sorts. Salt and vinegar crisps, anything. She puts vinegar on beans on toast. I'm like, that's too much. But, you know, she loves it. Yeah, you know. So Royal Mail, the best. It sounds like we've already had the bad delivery story of the drumsticks. Anything else?
I'm trying to think if I've had any annoying delivery experiences. No. I sent four flowers once and they like never arrived. That's pretty sad.
That is quite sad.
They didn't believe I sent the flowers. So I don't know who that was with, but they're my least favourite. Probably Every, isn't it?
Yeah, probably Every.
Just blame them.
Yeah.
Just blame them. Yeah.
Where can people find you online?
On Instagram, it's Georgia Chaloner, which is 2 L's, then IN.
Mm.
Everyone gets that confused. And then, just type that in on any socials. And that's me. Just type in Georgia C and it might come up.
We'll put the link and stuff as well. And then what's next in your diary then? What's coming up? Anything you can reveal?
I have so much going on, but it's like nothing that I can talk about, annoyingly. But next week I have some stuff. I have a Charlie show and then some work with Piri, and then a show with Piri at Drum Sheds in London. And then, yeah, some Shikari stuff later on. And then some playing stuff, which hopefully I can put out there soon.
Amazing.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This has been brilliant.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honour.
No, you're welcome.
We record him.
Thank you for listening.
I can say it again if you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you're more than welcome. Thanks, Georgia. I'll see you later.
Bye.
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 Gotta be quick. My ears are running out of power.
Oh, okay. Cool. Right.
I've only got one ear at the moment. We just do a really short outro. It's fine.
Yeah.
Cool. You ready?
That was our chat with Georgia Chaloner. Bye. How's that? Is that quick enough for you?
Very quick. Yeah, that was really good. Really good. Yeah. I'm just suffering from my AirPods are dying from battery. So,
because we'll all ears outro. With you today, isn't it?
I know. I'm just an ear boy. Ear boy. Very important. Ear boy. But yeah, no, that was a great chat.
Great chat.
And especially the health issue for me.
I think
that was just interesting that's something she noticed and you know, needed to get checked out, because it is demanding. Touring, playing, it is demanding on your health. And you even see professional footballers just bang, fittest athletes, you know.
Yeah.
They have their problems. So, you know, if you do feel anything, go and get yourself checked out. It's very important.
That's been the vibe of this intro and outro. Get yourself checked out if there's health issues. You know? But it's great that it didn't cause her to go, let's just leave it then. You know, she found different avenues. She went, right, well, what can I still do in the music industry?
And a perfect example of, you know, multiple avenues. You've got to have multiple avenues of revenue. You've got to do multiple things.
Yeah.
But it seems like she's absolutely smashing it in that. In the world, in the tech world and playback, she's found her avenue and she's doing really well. So it's great. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. Go and check her out. Hit her up if you need a playback tech, drum tech, player, anything really. You know,
she does
it all. Nice. Well, should we go then? Let's go.
Yeah, before
ears are about to die or something.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you have only got. Oh no, you've got them both in, but one.
I've got both
working.
In. I can only hear this one quietly. I've had the do-do-do-do-do-do-do noise. Anyway,
okay, let's wrap it up.
But yeah, thanks for listening. Hit us up, hit Georgia up, and we'll be back next week with another episode.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Drum and Drummer. You can find us on Instagram at Drum and Drummer Podcast. And you can send us an email to drumanddrummerpod@gmail.com. Remember, just pick up the sticks and twat it.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.